This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. The hits keep coming for Nipples Ring Gambino, the governor of New York State. On both fronts, new reporting on the nursing home scandal, the deaths and the cover-ups of deaths, as well as one of his accusers, one of the women who's accused him of sexual harassment, coming forward and speaking to Norah Donald, CBS. Let's start with the nursing home issue. Wall Street Journal reporting that top advisors successfully of party studs there, top advisors successfully pushed state health officials to strip a public report of data showing that more nursing home residents had died of COVID-19 than the Cuomo administration had acknowledged. The July report, which examined the factors that led to the spread of the virus in nursing homes, focused only on residents who died inside long-term care facilities, leaving out those who had died in hospitals after becoming sick in nursing homes. As a result, the report says 6,400 nursing home residents had died, which was an undercount of the death toll attributed to the state's most vulnerable population. The initial version of the report said nearly 10,000 nursing home residents had died in New York by July of last year. The changes Cuomo's aides and health officials made to the report, which haven't been previously disclosed, reveal that the state possessed a fuller accounting of out-of-facility nursing home deaths as early as the summer. And his health department resisted calls by state and federal lawmakers to release data for another 8 months. State officials now say more than 15,000 residents of nursing homes and other long-term care facilities were confirmed or presumed to have died from COVID-19 since March of last year. So again, 50% higher than the earlier official death count.
And Mr. Cuomo, Governor Cuomo, when he finally released the complete data, said that he withheld it out of concern that the Trump administration might pursue a politically motivated inquiry into the state's handling of the outbreak.
Well, that's what his aide, DeRosa, said. That was her cover story to Democrat lawmakers in New York, which was really the spark that reignited the interest in how nursing home residents were handled, as well as how honest the state was about the consequences of how the Cuomo administration chose to handle nursing home residents.
So they rewrote a report by state health officials to hide how many nursing home residents died in the pandemic.
Certainly,
that's the bottom line. I mean, that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay,
I mean,
let that for political soak in, reasons. People. Yeah. Let that sink in.
And so you have all.
Be in jail.
And you have these families, high profile like Janice Dean, but others who've come forward, who've written op-eds. We've referenced some of them here that they were lied to. So again, not only did you engage in malfeasance with respect to the decision you made about those nursing home patients, then you covered it up and you lied to their family members about what had transpired.
Yeah, he owes
at least five thousand. You want to do the whole 9/11 game that the media was doing?
Yeah, let's do that. Yeah,
5,000. That's almost twice as many people. That's 2/3 more people than died on 9/11. Right? You want to do that game that the media likes to do when it comes to, you know, COVID cases and deaths on a daily basis?
Yeah, but they get it from the governors. I mean, Pritzker said that this is our 9/11. That's why our flags are still. Still to this day are at half staff. But back to Cuomo, he owes those grieving family members an apology, don't you think? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment. And also, remember, he stuck one of his thugs on Janice Dean and told her, hey, honey, why don't you just stick to the weather? I mean, how condescending is that whole operation when they're telling someone who just lost her mother-in-law and her father-in-law, hey, Tootsie Toots, hey, just stick to weather. You know, I mean, these people are sick, and he needs to go. And I can't even laugh at the Nipples Ring Gambino today because I'm so disgusted with him and his behavior and what we learned last night.
Besides, how about party nips? Too. Can you laugh at that?
I don't
that?
Know.
Party
I can't
nips.
Laugh at it today. I want to wrap my head, my hands around his neck. Wake up.
Well, on the other front, Charlotte Bennett was no laughing matter either. Her interview with Norah O'Donnell. This is the... young woman, 25 years old, who was the governor's executive assistant. And she provided her first-person accounting of what had been reported that she alleged. The top line, pretty straightforward.
Governor Cuomo said that he has never propositioned anybody. Do you believe that he was propositioning you?
Yes.
For what?
Sex.
And I wanted to, show the little timeline, if we could play this, about how it all transpired, how this went down, how he was grooming her.
Governor Cuomo said that he has never propositioned anybody. Do you believe that he was propositioning you?
Yes.
For what?
Sex.
In the spring of 2020, New York was the epicenter of the COVID crisis.
The pandemic was obviously stressful for all of us, and he was on TV nearly every day talking about it.
Make that gown look good.
So you think all this national attention may have emboldened him?
Absolutely. I think he felt like he was untouchable in a lot of ways.
Bennett says their professional relationship took a turn on May 15th when she alleges the governor started asking her about her love life and then became fixated, repeating over and over again her history as a sexual assault survivor.
So he goes, "You were raped. You were raped. You were raped and abused and assaulted."
Another key encounter happened on June 5th when Bennett says she was called into Cuomo's office to take dictation, and he told her to turn off the tape recorder.
And then he explains at that point that he is looking for a girlfriend. He's lonely. He's tired.
You've just finished dictation, and the governor is telling you he's lonely and looking for a relationship.
Yes.
How do you sleep with yourself at night? How do you not just resign right now? Because she was believable. And she's not here, for fame or for follows on Instagram and things like that. She's a real victim of this sick, perverted person. That's the governor of New York.
Joe in Franklin Park.
Yeah, I think this Whitmer in Michigan's got to be happy for Cuomo because it's given her some cover on her payoffs that she's actually doing to state officials and saying that it's a non-disclosure agreements.
Well, thanks for the call, Joe. I mean, there's other governors that still are owed a reckoning with respect to this specific issue of nursing home patients, nursing home residents and hospital patients and the back and forth between the two. We know this from the beginning. It wasn't just Cuomo. It was Phil Murphy in New Jersey. It was Charlie Baker in Massachusetts, Republican. It was the Eva Perón of East Lansing, Gretchen Whitmer in Michigan. And it was Pritzker in Illinois. And at least that was reported, that all of these governors had given similar orders about returning infected nursing home patients to nursing homes. And it's only Cuomo where there has been a real wrecking on that issue. I think there is look-sees happening in Illinois. I know there are FOIAs that have been filed for more information about how nursing home residents were handled by Jelly Belly. But all of those governors and any other governor that gave a similar order, all of that needs to be fleshed out. I mean, the post-mortem, quite literally, on the lockdowns and these orders that were given by governors and the decisions that were made by the political ruling class. And in most states, it was a ruling class of one, the governor, because so many state legislatures abdicated any legislative responsibility here, any reining in of the emergency powers of these executives.
Yeah, we had one branch of government, and that was Pritzker.
This is not over. And it shouldn't be over, at least.
Well, and then, Dan, we have two friends of the show that they've lost their grandmas. And one woman, I think she's your former dentist, she lost her mother because they sent infected patients back into nursing homes. Those are facts.
Right. So we have anecdotes, and we would like a full accounting, the same way that full accounting is happening for Andrew Cuomo. And by the way, investigations ongoing and perhaps of a criminal nature. So the pressure needs to stay on, and perhaps this this dull press corps that we have in Chicago, this political in Springfield, the political press corps here, maybe they'll take a hint from what's happening with the feeding frenzy around Nipples Ring Gambino and do the same thing here. We'll see.
Yeah, but his people are put. I mean, he's in small towns. He's in South. He's not up at the Thompson Center. They are Joe Biden
so what?
Pritzker.
So
to
what?
Get access to him to ask questions.
Yeah, get information. You think has Andrew Cuomo been answering questions on it? No, he made statements like his now infamous statement, who cares where they died?
Right.
He's not answering questions. He's not going to be forthright. This is a guy who was in charge of a cover-up. You think Jelly Belly's going to be any more forthright? No, they're professional liars. So it requires actual work to get information and put the pieces together. And that's what you see finally happening. A really interesting piece, by the way, in the Daily Beast, hardly a man of the left, Ross Barkin. Cuomo was always New York's bad guy. Here's why he was finally exposed. And the why he was finally exposed is less interesting than why he was lionized. Too many politicians, pundits, and reporters allowed Cuomo to soar for all these months. In a sense, they are lucky he is Icarus, so hubristic that he decided to publish a memoir about combating the pandemic during the pandemic. Cuomo is undoing himself. That's actually what happened. You know, I don't want to give too much credit to the press corps that was inflating this guy for these many months. He's precisely right about that. But something he says about the press corps, which is important. There is an endemic in contemporary journalism that has been fully exposed by Cuomo debacles. Reporters crave narratives. They seek to arrange facts in such a way that stories can be told. They are taught to do this in J schools. Editors push them there, and Twitter seals the deal. In literature, characters have foils. In journalism, which too often takes its cues from the same place, this is also true. If Trump was darkness, someone had to be light. And it was decided that the tough-talking governor from New York who mastered the most rudimentary of presentation techniques, the PowerPoint, must be cast in the role.
It's so well, because month after month, he blamed Trump. He blamed Fox News. He blamed the New York Post. He blamed everybody but himself because he was part of a cover-up. He was part of a scam.
Cuomo was anointed, and he happily, greedily played the part. The facts were ignored, dismissed, even hidden. Mass death meant mass fame. Now we're beyond that, finally, and the same media apparatus that gave us Cuomo, the COVID conqueror, has decided to amplify all that is wrong with him and introduce Cuomo, the consummate creep. It should have happened a lot sooner. That's from a man on the left, Ross Barkin, writing at leftist outlet Daily Beast. That the shame and the reckoning that still is to come for media types, media outlets, as well as individual actors, and that's what they are, in this whole passion play. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. Get your tickets for Biden, the first 100 days on March 20th. Tickets are on sale now at 560theanswer.com/Biden.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Vox.com, another leftist outlet. The latest QAnon-inspired threat on the Capitol was thankfully a dud. Oh, who could have predicted that?
Please.
D.C. shut down. It has been on lockdown since January 6th. You have fencing and razor wire and thousands of National Guardsmen. And Congress suspended its business yesterday because of some conspiracy theory that apparently Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats are much more interested in tracking than anybody else is in terms of paying attention. A conspiracy theory that somehow Trump was going to regain power on March 4th and the QAnon conspiracy theorists were going to descend on D.C. to try and breach the Capitol again and make for an unsafe work environment and so on and so forth. Another insurrection, another siege. Our republic was in jeopardy yesterday to listen to the rhetoric from these leftist politicians in the run-up to yesterday.
The one CNN even said, and haven't they learned their lesson? Like what? Well, first of all, who? And Pete Williams at NBC News, who the justice correspondent has been there for years, did this whole long piece and then at the end said, there's no credible threats. Well, then why did you do this story in the first place?
Daily Caller video director Richie McGinnis was on site looking for these domestic terrorists that were much advertised. And
hey, did he find
up,
any?
Chatting up the National Guardsmen.
Thanks for your service. Guys, see any of those QAnon folks around here today? It's been super quiet. It's more media than anybody else, huh? Well, thank you. You guys stay safe. At least it's a pretty beautiful day, right?
Yeah.
What'd you have for lunch?
Beautiful day for martial law. This was what Nancy Pelosi had to say about all of this on Wednesday in advance of yesterday.
Supplemental is going to take more money to protect the Capitol in a way that enables people to come here, children to come and see our democracy in action, all of you to cover what happens here safely, members to be comfortable that they are safe when they are here, and not be concerned about what happened last time. But that just doesn't have a place in a democracy, so that many more people can come here and do their jobs. And the threat of all the president's men out there, we have to ensure with our security that we are safe enough to do our job.
Is she double masking over there? She could barely breathe.
Are you starting to get the picture of what this is about? And it doesn't matter to them that it was a non-event, because they have Christopher Wray saying, we have, you know, credible information about threats that we're monitoring and so on and so forth. Earlier this week, during his testimony before Senate Oversight Committee. Do you understand what they're doing? Are you seeing it? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line.
They're trying to make Republicans continue to look bad. You know, they're still a threat to us, so now we need to fortify the Capitol once again and cancel Congress for the day because it's not safe. I mean, they asked Capitol Police they're asking the National Guard to stay for another 60 days. Why? Do they say that there might be possible violence to justify them asking them to stay for another 60 days? Or are they still just trying to make Republicans look bad?
All the president's men, she's obviously referring to Trump, we need to be protected from all the president's men. Ted Lieu, Eric Swalwell, dispatched two of knuckleheads from California, and impeachment 2.0 managers, and of course Swalwell, the Chi-Coms Mata Hari's boyfriend, they were dispatched to the usual places, CNN, MSNBC, to tout the same line. It's not just that we face a threat from the president's men. We face a threat from Republican members of Congress. You know why? Well, here, listen to Ted Lieu.
And the Republican leaders can reduce the risk of further political violence by simply saying one simple, truthful sentence: the election was not stolen. The refusal to do that is why we need more Capitol Police officers, as Russell Henry has recommended, and why National Guard troops are still patrolling our Capitol today.
Because you won't say the election was not stolen.
Yep.
So in answer to the question that Michael Anton and others have raised, why are you so fixated on me having to agree with you about the election? Now they've come up with a rationale. If you don't agree with us about the election, then you are inciting violence. Here we go with the incitement to violence, manufacturing the incitement to violence charge again. You see, Eric Swalwell over with of course, very compliant.
Oh, yeah.
Andrea Mitchell saying the same.
It aligns, Andrea, with warnings we've seen before the January 6th attack, post January 6th. And I have to say, it angers me. Angers me that I have colleagues who have stood with some of these groups, who have perpetuated the lies that these groups have told around the election, and have done nothing to quell or to condemn these groups. And when that's the case, Elizabeth Newman testified from the Homeland, formerly from the Homeland Security Committee, to the Homeland Security Committee couple weeks ago, that when groups are not condemned, they feel emboldened. And the fact that I have colleagues that perpetuate this big lie about the election, that inspires these QAnon folks, and it makes them believe that they have a permissive operating environment, and that makes all of us less safe, and it affects our ability to do our job here.
Lies, lies, and more lies.
So the QAnon folks are the greatest, and you know, white supremacists, these are interchangeable. These are the boogeymen. These represent the great threat to our representative republic. As some people are trading conspiracy theories on Twitter or wherever. I don't know. I don't follow it that closely because I'm a serious person, unlike Eric Swalwell and Ted Lieu and the left. But I do take what they're doing seriously because Trump is not around anymore. So they need new boogeymen. And the boogeymen
are
QAnon and white supremacists and the use of them to brand Republican members of Congress, which you just heard both of those Democrat socialist congressmen do. And, oh, by the way, you, the Trump voter. That's the play.
Yep.
It's not that complicated. It's fairly straightforward, but it needs to be called out and there needs to be pushback to it. You can't just dismiss it because it's, you know, two asshats like Lieu and Swalwell doing it. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636-DA, turnkey.pro, text line. It's also coming to a general assembly near you, Illinois. Illinois Democrat Socialist calling for an investigation into State Rep. Chris Miller, who's the husband of newly minted Congressman Mary Miller.
Oh, no.
Because he was in attendance at the rally on January 6th. He wasn't arrested, didn't breach the Capitol. He's not accused of any criminal activity, but he was there. So there needs to be an investigation into him, you see.
Now, so, here it's another witch hunt. I mean, that's what the left does. They find an enemy, and then they try and make their life H-E double hockey sticks, and that's a grasp. That's a long throw right there.
Bob Morgan, who's a Democrat socialist from Deerfield, of course he is, supporting and participating in insurrection against the government is way beyond the pale and violates our oath of office. The state of Illinois deserves to know what role Representative Miller had in the riot of January 6th, and that is why I refer this matter to the Legislative Inspector General for proper investigation. And I know Chris Miller and Mary Miller, and these are good people. Chris Miller is one of the few stand-up guys actually in the General Assembly, like a real conservative, real principled conservative. And he and his family really live out their conservative values.
Right. It's not an act, folks.
But, you know, this is, again, somebody that is useful, cannon fodder for the left to play their boogeyman politics.
And they're mad because Chris Miller has a decal. A sticker on his pickup truck that they don't like.
Meanwhile, over on the other side, Miranda Devine over at the New York Post reporting a two-tier justice system. October report found 70% of charges were dropped for nearly 1,000 rioters arrested in Portland since late May. Now more than 30% of charges for the rest have been dropped.
Okay, so you think that they're not going to go back out and commit the same crimes again?
And you want to tell me that this is an interest in law enforcement? This is an interest in keeping the peace that the left has? No, it's not. This is using this as a front to advance their political agenda. And since they can't do it on the merits, they have to do it through boogeymen. Elliot and Wilmette, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Good morning. If they agreed that the election was not stolen, then there'd be five other things they want them in order to agree with, just to continue the farce. If you've stolen, you want to accuse others of stealing. If you've ruined the election process, you want to accuse others of threatening the election process. It's just childish projection. No 4-year-old would buy it. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. You're right, and it's not enough. You're exactly right, because saying the election wasn't stolen, I never said the election was stolen. But I do think there are a lot of questions to be asked and a lot of reforms to be advanced with the administration of elections in particular states. But if you say that, all they hear is you're saying the election was stolen. You have to agree that it was pristine, that there are no questions to be asked and thus no answers that need to be provided. There are no reforms other than, of course, their desire to federalize what happened in November of last year for all elections to come. That's the only proper reform. And anything short of celebration of that and acquiescence to everything that transpired last year is inciting violence. That's right. That's the argument you're getting from the left, stripped down. Marvin in Burlington, Wisconsin.
Yeah, good morning. There are Republicans, I believe, need to state and restate all the facts. Eric Swalwell sleeping with the enemy within, the FBI's failure over the last 4 years to do their job and their continuation of distortion of the truth and the facts. That is all about, you know, they want to talk about this fella from Deerfield, his husband. Why don't they, the Republicans, continually hit at Jan Schakowsky's husband, Robert Kramer, and all his dirty little dealings that he's been doing for the last four decades, and constantly hammer at these facts and push back, and because the news media isn't going to do it for them. They're never going to turn. They're going to continue the perpetuation of the propaganda from the Democratic Party. I think it comes from the same writer's room.
Thanks for the call, Marvin. Just to clarify, Chris Miller and his wife for Southern Illinois, Bob Morgan, the Democrat, who is calling for an investigation, referred Chris Miller for a legislative inspector general investigation, is from Deerfield, where they love their Democrat socialist. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
Listen to podcast of Dan and Amy from the AM 560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, and we have addressed this before, but it's been a few weeks, and more and more vaccinations are being deployed and new vaccines are coming online, including the J&J vaccine. By the way, that's a bit problematic if you're a faithful Catholic. We'll get to that in a second. Some good reporting from actually a network affiliate reporter out in Utah about adverse outcomes from the vaccine. Sicknesses, yes, but deaths too, and the reporting on that. And unlike the reporting on COVID from the outset and still to this day in many quarters, this is not about fear-mongering, or this is not an attempt to induce hysteria. This is an attempt to be transparent, ask questions, present information, gather information, have intelligent conversations about information we understand to be the case, for the purposes of understanding what's happening, sensible decision-making, sensible policy-making. Sensible decision-making at an individual level, sensible policy-making at a governmental level. And so this reporter, Heidi Hatch, and by the way, you know, sometimes there is good reporting. Happy to acknowledge that. Unfortunately, reports like this filed by this CBS reporter, Heidi Hatch, in Utah, are the exception, not the rule. If only more reporters were so inquisitive and dogged in actually putting together a package like this. Adverse outcomes from the vaccines, the incidence of them, how concerned should we be? Is there proper reporting going on? She interviewed three women who had adverse reactions to varying degrees, one who coded and had an allergic reaction, and then talked a little bit about what the reporting mechanism is for compiling outcomes from the vaccines, the deployment of the vaccines, the vaccinations. And so we want to take your calls, too, just in terms of, again, anecdotes, but they provide some insight. What has happened for you getting the vaccine, or those within your familial and larger social circle with respect to the vaccinations. 312-642-5600, turnkey.proanswerline, 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. Here's Heidi Hatch profiling one woman who almost died from an allergic reaction and some commentary from infectious disease personnel about it.
Probably 3 hours later that I was having breathing problems.
Carrie was rushed to the hospital, treated for an allergic reaction, and sent home. The next morning, her battle to breathe began again.
Very, very scary. I immediately went to the COVID ICU, and they did the swab right away and determined that it wasn't COVID, but that it was a reaction to the shot.
Once stabilized, Carrie was moved to another floor.
I got up there and coded again, and they brought me back down. Well, all the breathing and wheezing and everything had ruptured my vocal cord.
While Carrie's allergic reaction is rare, Dr. Tamara Sheffield, medical director of Intermountain Community Health and Prevention, says there are more allergic reactions to the COVID vaccines than first expected.
Anaphylaxis is moderately higher.
With twice as many documented allergic reactions from the Pfizer vaccine compared to Moderna.
And the nice thing is we are giving these vaccines in medical settings where we are able to administer the kind of medications to treat an anaphylaxis.
Early indications of allergic reaction created the 15-minute wait rule.
Everybody that I've talked to that has received it, I anticipate that they're going to tell me that they have side effects.
Rich Lakin, the immunization director for the Utah Department of Health, explains all medications and vaccinations have side effects.
Everybody is going to have a different response to a vaccination.
That's right. Yeah, that's fair. So the question is, are we getting, accurate data about those adverse reactions, the different reactions? You know, some a sore arm is one thing.
Yeah, but
an anaphylaxis is obviously something very, very different. What are the Utah stats, just to give you some sense here? And listen to what that doctor, that infectious disease expert, Dr. Tamara Sheffield, said about vaccinations, the standard. In terms of assessing the threat. It's very interesting.
In Utah, after nearly 500,000 COVID shots, there have only been 114 reports of side effects to VAERS, including 4 reported deaths.
Is it saying that the vaccine caused the deaths or there were deaths in people who received vaccine? And that's 2 very different things.
Yes, doctor, that is 2 very different things. And I'm not accusing her of this, but how about the reporting we've been subjected to since the beginning? Is there a difference between dying with COVID and dying from COVID? No.
Not
in the way it was reported. No. Not in the way stats were compiled. But what we're supposed to apply, and this is actually proper, that standard of it's different that you die having been vaccinated than die from being vaccinated.
So they don't know, they can't separate those two out?
Well, no, they can. They should, she's saying. And she's right to say that about vaccines. Why were people who said that about COVID wrong? How are we – so any deaths from the vaccination, why aren't we doing the same thing we did with COVID? Whether you died from the vaccination or with the vaccination, we're counting it as a vaccination death. Oh, obviously, because you've had, 15% of the population vaccinated. So when they die, they've been vaccinated. So you would have, millions of people ostensibly over the course of the next year, quote unquote, dying from being vaccinated. That would be silly. That'd be a silly way to do statistics, wouldn't it be? That'd be a silly way to do record keeping, wouldn't it be? Right. And so dying from COVID and dying with COVID, no distinction there. Is that a silly way to do record keeping? Is that a silly way to do statistics? Does that distort the actual threat presented by COVID?
Well, the CDC came out, remember, and said only 6% of COVID deaths, these people actually died just from COVID. The rest, the 94% died from complications or died with COVID. I mean, George Floyd had COVID. People who were hit by cars, they died from COVID. I was in the room that day when Dr. Nziki said, yeah, so somebody's in hospice. Our friend's mom had pancreatic cancer, was dying. We knew she was on the driveway home, but they put her down as a COVID death.
Well, this is my point.
It's so irresponsible, though.
Right.
And that's why the numbers are so inflated, and that's why half of America doesn't believe this bull jive that's going on.
And nobody remembers the 6% statement that was issued by CDC, which is accurate. That's what the CDC said. Nobody remembers that, but they get pounded with 500,000 people dead, 500,000 people dead. Yes.
Well, we have candlelight vigils and moments of silence, and that's fine. And we know people that have died from it, and I am so sorry. But destroying our economy and our kids' lives?
Forget, the policies, but just the record keeping, just that one question. I want, public health professionals to respond to that. And I wish the reporter would have followed up with Dr. Sheffield there out there in Utah and asked the same question. So if to do otherwise with the vaccinations would be irresponsible, how was it responsible to do that very thing with COVID? The national stats, by the way.
Yeah.
This is just it was mentioned here, VAERS. This is the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System. But it's self-reporting. It should be the doctor and or the patient reporting to the system that was set up by the CDC about 30 years ago. But even the experts suggest it captures, a small fraction, because a small fraction of people even know it exists.
Nationally, there have been 1,381 reports of deaths, tens of thousands of hospitalizations, dozens of miscarriages, heart attacks, and strokes. But even still, experts believe VAERS only captures a small number of reactions.
Rockford, again, this is anecdotal. Rockford this week, a 28-year-old healthcare worker died soon after receiving the second injection of the experimental Pfizer vaccine. Sarah Stickles, a nutritional specialist at Swedish American Hospital in Rockford. She was otherwise healthy. Now, I don't know, but 28 years old, otherwise healthy, and she had, it seems like, an adverse reaction that induced her death from the vaccination. It was a brain aneurysm.
Oh God!
So it's difficult to make that direct connection. I don't know. I'm just reporting on her, the tragic death of this young woman. But I mean, the way that we're talking about this, compare that to the way we've been conditioned to talk about COVID for the last year.
Well, I got vaccinated because I'm a teacher or a CPS coach, and I'm allergic to polyethylene glycol. So after you get your vaccine, you go sit down for 15 minutes. But if you have allergies, you go to another part and you have to wait 30 minutes. All of a sudden, I got the worst rash on my chest. And then I had a rash on my hands where it looked like it was bruising. And they gave me an EpiPen and they gave me Benadryl, and my heart rate had doubled. And she knew exactly what I was allergic to. She's like, it's PEG. It's in the I took the Pfizer. She goes, it's in the Pfizer and the Moderna. It's the first time ever in American history that a vaccine has PEG in it. So if you're allergic to that, and then the doctor came, and then I can't take the second vaccine, but they filled out paperwork. I was there for 2 hours so that the CDC knew, that they documented any time that there's a patient with an allergic reaction.
Well, the CDC doesn't document it.
Well, they filled out the paperwork on the computer for the CDC.
Fine, but as you heard, that's a small fraction of cases that this VAERS system captures, according to public health experts. Very small percentage, because it's self-reporting. And so how many medical professionals do it? How many patients otherwise do it?
Well, a lot of them leave, and then they get allergic reactions.
How many do even know that it exists? And the point is to say this is not an anti-vaccine position.
No.
This is a complete, contextual, accurate information, so you enhance your understanding and make informed decisions conversation. One that we have struggled to have, haven't we, for the last year about COVID. Cornell in Villa Park, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yes, good morning. How are you doing?
Morning.
Good morning to Dan and Amy. Listen, I am so glad that you all have started up this conversation about Pritzker. I'm not sure if you know this or not, but last year in March, this was before the school lockdowns, before most of the companies were sending people home, he and Governor Cuomo were on MSNBC, the Morning Joe Show. They were on in the same morning, but it was two different segments. And both of them said that they knew that a coronavirus was coming. Now, Pritzker, the way he worded it, he said that in the summer of 2019, they were doing tabletop exercises, and that they had anticipated a virus outbreak coming over perhaps from Asia. Now, my question is, number one, where did he get that information from about a possible virus coming over from Asia? Number two, if he did have that information that far in advance from everybody else, why wasn't anything done? There were no bulletins that were sent out. There were no health tips that were sent out. There were nothing that was done at that time to help all of those people who passed from last year up until now, when he was going on stage, giving those press conferences, him and Dr. Ezekiel. These are the things that he said. They both were on that morning, and they were on there basically to mock Trump, because this thing was political from the beginning. So if there is an investigation that is brewing on him, he needs to be investigated. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call, Cornell. I mean, you know, this, I don't remember exactly what you're referencing in terms of that Morning Joe interview, but I mean, the idea of wargaming with respect to viruses, like with respect to other threats to America, is not necessarily new. That's not the same thing as knowing there's going to be a coronavirus that that breaks out in China and makes its way to America and the timeline and all those things. But I mean, the idea of Pritzker being investigated, I'm very open-minded about, generally speaking. Greg in Jefferson Park.
Hey, good morning, guys. You know, with respect to two things. Well, number one, my mom has, I've been caring for my mom now for about 20 months with a huge wound that she had on her leg. And I got COVID before COVID was kind of known. Between Christmas and New Year's, I first started showing symptoms and was caring for her daily, coughing my brains out and everything else. Neither of my folks ever got it. Now, one of the things that I would say, my mom's doctor told her that she should not get the vaccine because she's allergic to all kinds of antibiotics. When she was in the hospital and had a CAT scan, if you know anybody that's allergic, guys, tell them don't get the contrast when you get a CAT scan, because it
that's
almost
what
killed
I was,
her.
That's what I went into anaphylactic shock too.
Thanks,
and I had
Greg.
To stay at the hospital for that. And that is what is in the Pfizer and the Moderna. That the PEG that's in the contrast is also in that. So be careful.
Well, and this is, you know, Alex Berenson, the former New York Times reporter, sort of fashioned himself into a bit of a COVID expert. He's done really good reporting on this. You know, his position is he's very reticent to take the mRNA vaccines, which is Pfizer and Moderna, the genetically sequenced vaccines. This is new innovation in vaccinations. And, you know, based on how unproven it is, even despite the clinical trials, generally speaking, in terms of use over hundreds of millions of people, and the relative threat that he or his son faces from a COVID infection, he's pretty skeptical at this stage about taking those vaccines. It's just, again, it's just one person's view who's fairly informed on the topic. Mary Kay, Western Springs.
Hi, good morning, guys. What do you think the chances are we'll get any accurate reporting here in Illinois about what's going on in these vaccination sites and stuff?
Well, I mean, you know, part of that is awareness of the VAERS system, and then it's the initiative of medical professionals and patients who have adverse effects or outcomes. Yeah.
Well, they're keeping tabs.
Yeah,
I mean, at least at Triton College, they're keeping tabs.
And, yeah, I get it.
And the same nurse that I worked with was at Tinley Park, and she said, oh, people were falling down, but that's because elderly people, they had to walk so far to get to the vaccination site that some of them were dehydrated, would pass out, they're diabetic, and she said it was worse over there than it was at Triton.
Right. Okay. So that's it. You need to have all the information to make an informed decision. There's a new category on the sign up thing, guys, too, called 1B+. Have you heard of this?
No. What's that?
Amy? Apparently, if you have 1B+ means if you are allergic to, antibiotics, or if you've had anaphylactic shock, or things like underlying conditions like you have, like a lot of people have, new category, you can move up in the line to get vaccinated, you know, like after they do, people over 65, people like me who are under 65 can start getting in line to be vaccinated if you designate yourself as a category 1B+. That's what I heard yesterday. So
thanks, Mary Kay, appreciate it. Robert in Bloomingdale.
Good morning. If I heard so many times how safe these vaccines are, they are still experimental, and that's a fact, and nobody repeats that. If they kept repeating that these are experimental, maybe somebody would ask more questions. B, because this is a propaganda system they're using on this.
Well, thanks for the call, Robert. I think they, I mean, the evidence suggests they are overwhelmingly safe for you know, the overwhelming percentage of the population that's been vaccinated. That's the evidence.
Well, and people should know nationwide nursing home deaths are down 82% from December 20th.
But that's not, it's not just vaccinations. There's all sorts of variables that go into that, as we know, because how do we get to herd immunity? Infections and survival, mm-hmm. vaccinations, and those with natural immunity. And those with natural immunity was wildly underestimated by the CDC for the better part of the last year. Mm-hmm. But setting that aside, the point that Robert makes is still a good one, though. You raise skepticism when you pretend that something is without flaw. What's the great line from Seabiscuit? Show me something that's perfect and I'll show you something that's not perfect. Yeah. It's not perfect. Is it generally safe based on the evidence? Yes, it is. But you should, of course, be asking questions and, of course, be getting accurate information and following up. The same people who were not omniscient before the vaccines were developed are still not omniscient. Always ask questions. And if you're not getting answers or people are dismissing you for asking those questions, then they're actually the ones generating perhaps undue skepticism. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer. Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. When you've got questions, he always has an answer. It's Sean Hannity, this afternoon at 2 on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Things continue to deteriorate for Party Nips, the governor of the state of New York. Anzi Cuomo. One of his accusers, Charlotte Bennett, coming forward to answer questions from CBS's Nora O'Donnell provide more context to the allegations that have been reported that she made. She started, she concluded, but this is where we're going to start, in reacting to that non-apology that he tried the other day, and she characterized it correctly as far as I'm concerned.
I did. It's not an apology. It's not an issue of my feelings. It's an issue of his actions. The fact is that he was sexually harassing me, and he has not apologized for sexually harassing me, and he can't even use my name.
She's a 25-year-old former executive assistant of the governor's. And Nora O'Donnell reporting that the relationship started to deteriorate back in May of last year amid the height of his COVID-19 celebrity at the hands of the Eastern Seaboard Press Corps. And this is such a bizarre thing that he did that began the souring of their relationship, according to her, which is taking something that she apparently told him in confidence and repeating it back to her.
So he goes, "You were raped. You were raped. You were raped and abused and assaulted."
And he was basically trying to get in her pants, but you know, like men think, "Oh, wow. I mean, is it worth it? Should I even try? Or is she, you know, sensitive to intimacy because she was raped?" I mean, basically, that's what happened.
He asked if I had trouble enjoying being with someone because of my trauma.
This seems highly inappropriate.
Yeah. The governor asked me if I was sensitive to intimacy.
In his office?
Yes. During the workday.
You have been quoted as saying that he also asked you about if you'd ever been with an older man.
Yeah. He asked me if age difference mattered. He also explained that he was fine with anyone over 22.
And how old are you?
25.
He's very young, 63, I guess. But
He's 63.
I want to focus on this and get your reaction to it as well as our callers. Yes. 312-642-5600, Turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, Turnkey.pro text line. What do you think he's doing when he repeats back to her that she was raped repeatedly? What is that?
Well, first of all, boundaries, buddy. I mean, clear. He's so selfish and narcissistic. Personally, for me, I just think that he was wondering, should I waste my time with her or should I just move on to somebody else because she might have intimacy problems because she was raped? That's what how I processed what she said.
Yeah, but why wouldn't he just ask the question then if that's what he was angling at rather than repeating to her what had happened to her that she apparently told him? Right. That's there's something more sociopathic going on there, I think, when you're telling somebody what they told you, you know, this trauma that happened to her, apparently, you're repeating that back to her. It's almost like he was trying to break her down or something. But I don't know. I'm interested, like a female perspective on that. You tell your boss, man, and your boss, even more to the point, that you were sexually assaulted or raped. I don't know exactly what she told him, but he repeats back to you when he's trying to, flirt with you or trying to
court you or whatever.
Court you, yeah. He repeats back to you. You were raped. I mean, you heard how she said it. He repeated back to me. You were raped. You were raped. You were raped. Why would somebody do that?
You know what? He's a sociopath.
That's weird.
That's exactly. I mean, you nailed it. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36, type in DA, then a quick comment. And people should know, he's got three daughters with Kerry Kennedy. Robert Kennedy is one of his 11 children. And his daughters, Dan, he has twin daughters that are 25 years old and another daughter who's 22 years old.
Mm-hmm.
They cannot be happy right now with pops.
And he has also said that perhaps some people misinterpreted what he was doing, you know, his zany sense of humor. That was the first non-apology before the second non-apology. Well, Charlotte Bennett says, no, there was no misinterpreting what he was doing.
Governor Cuomo said that he has never propositioned anybody. Do you believe that he was propositioning you?
Yes.
For what?
Sex.
Seems pretty straightforward to her. I just that whole repeating back to a sexual assault victim that they were sexually assaulted is just weird to me.
I know. We got a great text message. Amy and Dan, I think he was trying to convince her she was damaged, but I'm such a nice guy, I'm okay with it.
Maybe.
Which is sick, but maybe that was it too.
Well, that's what I'm trying to understand and get a female perspective on. Let's get Janine's on the south side. Hey, Janine.
Hey, Dan and Amy, how are you? Interesting topic. I actually spoke with his name. He wrote the book, How to Love a Man Who Loves Himself. He's a top expert on narcissism in the United States at the University of South Carolina.
Was that written by Andrew Cuomo?
Andrew Cuomo's picture is on the cover, actually. But yeah, exactly. It's all about power and control. And Amy, this man is not capable of any sort of intimacy. It's breaking women down, and it's all about power and control. That's what it is, and that's his MO.
And Janine, this is.
But he's the love gov.
Yeah, right. But I mean, he's
the love gov.
I thought Charlotte.
Keith Campbell.
Yeah,
Keith Campbell. That's his name, Dr. Keith Campbell. And it was a tremendous amount of insight speaking with him, but narcissistic, they do a lot of damage.
Yeah, and what he put her through, I mean, what she said yesterday, I felt like we were in the room with her.
What were you thinking as he's asking you these questions?
I thought, he's trying to sleep with me. The governor's trying to sleep with me. And I'm deeply uncomfortable. And I have to get out of this room as soon as possible.
I have to get out of this room as soon as possible.
Thanks for the call, Janine. Well, she said, I mean, it doesn't exactly take a lot of interpretive skill when he says, you know, are you open to a relationship with older men? And I'm good with anybody over 22 and so on and so forth. I mean, it wasn't exactly subtle. And she said too, you know, this thing just didn't go the way he thought it was going to go. That was essentially.
Well, that's the thing. And also, you know, well, why didn't you say something? Why didn't you stick up for yourself? Why didn't you quit?
when I was even thinking of coming forward, I think that was where I held the most shame. And that, like, I really was uncomfortable.
Why did you feel shame?
I feel like people put the onus on the woman to shut that conversation down. And by answering, I was somehow engaging in that or enabling it, when in fact I was just terrified.
People will watch this and say, why didn't you get up and leave?
It didn't feel like I had a choice. He's your boss. He's my boss. He's everyone's boss.
You know, Norah O'Donnell, we don't need the melodrama, honestly. That's not helpful. Why do you need to overstate the case when the case is strong enough on its own? That no one is saying, oh, the 25-year-old executive assistant, why didn't you, you know, Dolly Parton 9-to-5 him and tell him where to get off and walk? Everybody understands that you're a 25-year-old executive office, executive assistant. He's the governor of the state. You're in his, you're being made to feel uncomfortable in his office. You want to get out, but you want to, you know, be polite about it or deferential about it. He's also this big celebrity now, thanks to the DC press corps, the so-called Me Too sensitive DC press corps that turned this monster into a celebrity. So nobody thinks, oh, Charlotte, why didn't you just get up and leave? That's ridiculous. Nobody's blaming her. It's absurd. Nancy in Crete.
Hi. I just am wondering, why would CNN have on Rudy Giuliani's daughter last night with Anderson Cooper to talk about her bizarre sex life of how she likes to have sex with more than three people?
What is that? I missed that one.
No, yeah, that's right.
What is that?
Why would they do that? Is it a distraction, or is it to discredit this young girl who I found, you know, unbelievably poised and well-spoken and completely credible, I'm sure. That probably happened. But what's with Rudy Giuliani's daughter and CNN? I think
they had nothing else to cover because they're not covering this story.
Well, okay, maybe. Thanks for the call.
You got to fill the segment.
Yeah, and it's a way to continue to slime Rudy Giuliani and Trump world, I guess. I don't know. It's obviously, I mean, you're talking about Anderson Cooper. You're talking about CNN. You're talking about the media generally. What won't they do that appeals to prurient interests? I mean, what won't they do? The more salacious, the better. That's just a general rule. And if there's a political overlay on it that is advantageous to them, then all the better, right? And that's, by the way, that's no defense of Rudy Giuliani or the kind of father he was. I have no idea. I don't really want to get into it, but I agree. It's interesting that the timing of that and that story coming out and the coverage of so forth, bizarre. I don't want to go down another rabbit hole.
I want you to go down a rabbit hole.
Dawn in Plainfield, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah, my comment is that safe people who are wise, they know how to keep boundaries, and dangerous people don't. Yep. And it sounded to me as if he was trying to figure out how stupid she is or naive because of her age. And it just shows you what a dangerous person he is, because wise people who respect other people don't treat people like that. They're very demeaning.
That's a good observation. Thanks for the
really
call,
good.
Dawn. Teresa on the north side.
Yes, good morning, Amy and Dan. I'm on the bandwagon with Cuomo is beyond arrogant. I mean, people say, oh, he's so arrogant. No, he's a narcissist and a sociopath. He's sick in the head. And he will never resign because in his mind, he's never done anything wrong. So it's always, you know, everyone else's fault. And the only way he'll be removed from office is if he's impeached. They're going to have to force him out.
Mm-hmm. No, that's right. Thanks for the call. Well, I mean, he said that in his second non-apology apology, right? It's the whole, if you were offended by something I did, if you thought I acted inappropriately. He didn't say I acted inappropriately. Inappropriately. If you perceived it, if you wrongly perceived it, then, boy, I'm going to take ownership of it because I'm a stand-up guy.
It's part of the apology that we didn't play yesterday that, I mean, it's, and all, he said, and I apologized last week. I apologized yesterday. I'll apologize tomorrow. I'll apologize the next week if I have to.
Yeah.
Like, well, I'm sorry, like, I'm such some guy trying to make me look bad.
Well, it's his way of, you know, you can avoid the substance by just repeating what you think you're doing or what you're trying to convince people doing.
No remorse. Such a shallow attempt at an apology.
Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one. Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Thinking a little bit more about Governor Nippelstud's and the way he was described by Charlotte Bennett, we talked about before the top of the hour. It reminds me of this study that was done last year at by researchers at University of British Columbia with respect to the dark triad personalities, those who have a combination of Machiavellian, narcissistic, and psychopathic tendencies, the dark triad characteristics. And it strikes me that thinking about Hansie Cuomo's two attempts at an apology, that's what we have at play there. Remember, those dark triad personality traits are more likely to manifest themselves in the virtuous victim. And isn't that what Cuomo is doing when he does the "I never inappropriately touched anybody"? If I made you feel awkward, it certainly wasn't my intent. I was completely ignorant. I apologize if you felt awkward. I apologize if you misinterpreted, if you thought, not what I did.
If anybody was offended by it, and I could intend no offense, but if they were offended by it, then it was wrong.
See, that's the virtuous victim.
There you go.
Right? I'm a victim, but I tell you what, I'm going to own it because I'm virtuous. You know, like he told his brother Fredo, "Hey, I just do what's right. That's just what I do.
It's just what I am, man. I'm a love gov."
I assume if and when he ever offers a statement about the nursing home scandal, the order that he gave, the consequences it wrought, the cover-up that followed, he will also say, "I never inappropriately touched any report," because we have a Wall Street Journal story that broke last night that finds more evidence that Cuomo's top advisors successfully pushed state health officials to strip a public report of data showing that more nursing home residents had died of COVID-19 than the administration had acknowledged.
Yeah. So the aides rewrote a report by state health officials to hide how many nursing home residents died during the pandemic.
And let's bring our next guest for more on this topic, because he suggests that there's something else going on here, particularly when it as it relates to the press corps coverage of Cuomo's implosion. Pleased to be joined again by John Nolte, who is editor-at-large, Breitbart.com. John, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Morning. So the particular angle you take is that Cuomo is the fall guy for other governors, other Dem socialist governors that the press corps don't want to see fall.
Yeah, he's the symbol of the nursing home scandal. I mean, the Democrat Party is so insane, that they close schools where no one's at risk, and they pour coronavirus into nursing homes where everyone's at risk. Mm. And right now, Cuomo is the face of that scandal. The problem for the media, and it's a real scandal, is that there are four other Democrat governors that did the exact same thing. The governor of Pennsylvania and Michigan and New Jersey among them. There's one more. Oh, Newsom in California. So you've got New Jersey, California, Michigan, in Pennsylvania, four Democrat governors who are up for re-election. One's in a tough recall fight. And if the media takes the nursing home scandal and reports on that accurately and reports on that responsibly, Cuomo's going to go down, because he not only lied about that scandal, he not only told the public that it wasn't his fault that that happened, it was a directive from Trump's D.C., which was a lie. He also covered it up. He covered up documents, and that might actually be a crime. So if the media go after him for that, they're going to have to go after these other four Democrat governors two of whom are in important swing states. And that's, and having a governor in office in your party helps a lot if you want to win that state during the presidential election.
Right, Tom Wolf in Pennsylvania. Well, just to Tom Wolf in Pennsylvania and the Eva Perón of East Lansing, Gretchen Whitmer in Michigan. Right, those are the two swing states. And then you mentioned Newsom and Murphy in New Jersey. Also, though, too, and because we've talked a bit about this, initially last year the reporting was that orders like this were also given by Charlie Baker, the Republican governor of Massachusetts, and in our home state of Illinois. There's real question because we can't seem to get a straight answer, and there's now a look-see going on into whether Governor Pritzker in Illinois did the same.
Yeah, so it's just unfathomable that we would close schools where no one's at risk and pour the virus into nursing homes. It's sociopathic behavior. So They've got Cuomo as the face of this. So what do they do to appease and distract? They make an issue out of three sexual harassment claims. And I'm not saying that Cuomo behaved in a way that's appropriate, but let's face it. All he did was he's single. You know, he's obviously on the make. He didn't behave in the correct way, but I mean, why are we talking more about him offending three left-wing women with an aggressive come-on that certainly shouldn't result in him being kicked out of office? Why are we talking about that instead of about 15,000 dead seniors?
Right. Well, I mean, it's what he did to those women wasn't criminal. It was slimy and disgusting. But what he did in the nursing homes and you know, altering reports from the state health department, that's criminal.
Exactly. So the media is going to, I think they want to take him out for this much, much lesser crime in the hopes that that's just going to make the whole nursing home scandal go away. That's what I think is going on here, because offending three left-wing women with aggressive come-ons is not a fireable offense. I'm sorry. Should he be admonished for it and embarrassed? Yes. Is it news? Yes. But should he lose? Should an election in New York be overturned? No, but that's what they're doing. They're going to sacrifice Cuomo with this non-scandal, so that hoping that this whole nursing home scandal doesn't unravel the. And the other thing too is that once we learn what the Democrat Party did wrong during the coronavirus, and as the days go on, we're learning these lockdowns. You just look at Florida, were a terrible idea. They made no difference. The psychological damage, especially to young kids, for these lockdowns. Is going to be devastating. You look at Operation Warp Speed, which Trump did, obviously the best thing that happened during this entire thing. He was probably the only president who could have gotten us a vaccine in less than a year. So you look at all these things, and what the media doesn't want is the whole narrative unrolling that Trump did a pretty good job, and I've always said he did a pretty good job, and the Democrats and their fascist lockdowns and their anti-science closing of schools and these nursing homes, that's where the real catastrophe is.
I wanted to get your reaction, too, to Tony Fauci's pronouncement the other day that we may not be back to pre-pandemic normal by March of next year. Now, it's rather interesting because it seems the closer we get to herd immunity, and you had Dr. Marty Makary from Johns Hopkins projecting it could be as soon as April, the closer we get to herd immunity, the farther away in time we get to normal, according to Tony Fauci, before all of these vaccines were coming online, certainly more recently, and before we were at, you know, most states being 70, 80, 90% of vaccines deployed, before we were having medical professionals projecting herd immunity by April. He was saying maybe fall, then he said maybe winter. Now he's saying not even by next spring. How do you explain that?
Well, Fauci's always been a liar. I mean, he told us we didn't need
that explains it.
And he told us we did.
There you go.
Yeah, and he's always lied to us. And then he told us, you know, that it wouldn't be as bad, and then it would be bad. And then his excuse is always, well, I don't want to panic anyone. And, you know, now, yeah, it's just, so he has no credibility anymore. and he's a laughingstock. And we're seeing right now that the coronavirus, the infection rate, the hospitalization rate, and the death rate is plummeting. And it sounds like we're, and I say this cautiously, but it's still pretty cold out there. It sounds like we're entering herd immunity, and we might be doing it for the reason that that guy in the Wall Street Journal said from Johns Hopkins. One, we have a vaccine out there. We're getting 1 million people a day vaccinated. And two, I think a lot of people have this and don't know it. They don't know that they're already they already have the antibodies in them. And between those two things, I think we might be achieving herd immunity. But here you have this idiot, Fauci, who's been lying to us, looking in the camera and lying to us for more than a year. And he keeps extending it. But the thing is, and this is another, this is why I think Biden is allowing illegal immigrants with coronavirus into the country. The thing you have to remember about the Democrats is that they love this virus because it gives them extraordinary power. Mm-hmm. It gave them the power to change the election laws that won the election for Biden. They love locking us down. They love putting us in masks. They're little tyrants, and they love having these powers to micromanage our lives. And Fauci doesn't want to let go of that.
There's something else, too, that Fauci is emblematic of, and it is spread across the political ruling class in both parties, which is a concept that goes back to Plato, the noble lie, the noble liar. And Fauci gave the tell to the New York Times when he said, you know, I said herd immunity at this level versus this level because, you know, I'm parceling out information in such a way right. that I think the public can handle it. The noble lie. These people are our betters. And so sometimes they can't quite completely level with us because they have to bring us troglodytes along slowly in such a way that we can process their wisdom.
And look at but look at how the media reacts to Fauci's noble lie and what they would describe as Trump lying. In the early days of the pandemic, Trump was trying to reassure us. Isn't that a noble lie? If he was lying, isn't that a noble lie? But they won't give him that benefit of the doubt because Fauci's one of them. And Fauci's going to try and keep us locked down as long as possible. And thank God for federalism. Thank God Trump, another great decision he made, was allowing the states to handle this themselves. Yep. Because now Florida, which issued no restrictions, no mandates, including masks or the number of people you can have in your business, he let Floridians make their own decision. Florida is proving that these lockdowns were useless because Florida's per capita death rate is, I think, 27th in the entire country. Florida's doing much better than states that locked everyone down. And that is very telling. And now that Texas and Mississippi have removed all restrictions, hopefully that's going to start a wave. And the other states are just going to have to because these states are acting on their own.
Well, a wave of Neanderthal thinking is what you're talking about.
So, John Nulty, everyone,
thank God for Neanderthal.
Everyone should read your article on Breitbart because on page two, it outlines in great detail what exactly those four governors did. I mean, Whitmer, she issued an order that a long-term care facility must not prohibit admission or readmission of a resident based on COVID-19 testing requirements. I mean, it's just shocking that and Tom, Wolf in Pennsylvania, a mandatory admission policy in March, saying nursing care facilities must continue to accept new admissions and receive readmissions for current residents who have been discharged from the hospital. I mean, did they do this to drive up the deaths to make Trump look bad? I'm not a conspiracy theorist, but I don't know what else to think.
There is a mentality among the Democrat Party. This is just a fact. There's a person, I forget his name. He's a very, very famous person who's in the Obama administration. He was one of the architects of Obamacare. And he said we should stop taking care of people after they turn 75 years old.
Zeke Emanuel.
Very high up in the Democrat Party, very respected. I think he's part of Biden's administration now.
Yeah, part of the
stop taking care of people after they turn 75. And this is the guy Biden was talking to when he was running for president for advice on the coronavirus. And this guy wants us to stop taking care of everybody over 75. My wife's going to turn 73 this year. My dad is 81. My mom is 77. This guy's out of his mind. But that's how they look at the elderly. They look at the elderly as, one, a drain on resources they could use to implement their utopia, and two, who do the elderly vote for? They vote for Republicans. So if they could kill us all off,
I'm sorry, that's just how they think. And Zeke Emanuel didn't hide it. It's not a conspiracy. It's the mentality. He said that. Zeke Emanuel said that. He wrote that in an article. And he's still a legitimate member of high levels of the Democrat Party establishment. I think it tells you all you need to know.
He is John Nolte, editor-at-large, Breitbart, breitbart.com. John, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure. Have a good weekend, guys.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. Get your tickets for Biden, the first 100 days on March 20th. Tickets are on sale now at 560theanswer.com/Biden.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. I'm inclined to be an acolyte of Mark Twain and his observation that no man's life, liberty, or property are safe while the legislature's in session. But the suspension of legislative session in D.C. by Nancy Pelosi because of a alleged threat from the president's men, as she terms them, that needs to be addressed straight away. Here's what Pelosi had to say on Wednesday.
Supplemental is going to take more money to protect the Capitol in a way that enables people to come here, children to come and see our democracy in action, all of you to cover what happens here safely, members to be comfortable that they are safe when they are here and not be concerned about what happened last time. But that just doesn't have a place in a democracy, so that many more people can come here and do their jobs. The threat of all the president's men out there, we have to ensure with our security that we are safe enough to do our job, but not impeding. I mean, I live in San Francisco.
Yeah, we know. Richie McGinnis, the video director for the Daily Caller, dailycaller.com, he was on site yesterday in D.C., and he was looking high and low for these QAnon conspiracy theorists who are apparently represent an existential threat to the Republic, according to Pelosi. Here's what he found in conversations with National Guardsmen.
Thanks for your service. You guys see any of those QAnon folks around here today? It's been super quiet. It's more media than anybody else, huh? Well, thank you. You guys stay safe. At least it's a pretty beautiful day, right?
It's always a beautiful day for martial law in D.C. with leftists in charge. So that was the story. Oh, and the kicker to the story is the recommendation.
No credible threat?
Is the recommendation by General Honoré for 1,000 more Capitol Police officers to protect the political ruling class. So 1,000 more Capitol Police officers to protect D.C. politicians. Meanwhile, those same D.C. politicians on the left want to defund the police for the hoi polloi out there outside the Beltway. Isn't that interesting? For more on this topic, we're pleased to be joined by our old friend who's got a new title.
Yay!
Our old friend, of course, is Burgess Owens. He is a Super Bowl champion, former NFLer, author of Why I Stand, From Freedom to the Killing Fields of Socialism, and you may call him now the Honorable Burgess Owens. He is a congressman from Utah's 4th. Burgess, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Dan and Amy, thank you so much. Looking forward to chatting with you guys, for sure.
So what about Nancy Pelosi's shutdown of Congress because of this perceived threat emanating from the Twitter sphere?
Well, you know, if we learn our history, we recognize that fear is always used by those who want to control others. And we live in a country that's based on faith. We always have been. We dream. We take risks. I mean, we're the country that, of entrepreneurs. We get up every single day and figure out if we want to achieve something, we have the right to try and to fail. These guys are, it's an amazing process to see what's going on. And I tell you, Dan, I think the upside is very simply this. You know, we've been talking about the hard left for a long, long time. Many of us have been talking about the threat of socialism, Marxism. It's not taught in schools nowadays. It is. Oh, by the way, there's a remarkable book. I can't highlight this enough. Written back in 1958, called The Naked Communists. If you want to see what's going on today, you want to see the tactics that's happening today, that's a great, great read. But at the end of the day, we now see firsthand and with remarkable contrast exactly what it looks like. You're right. We have this remarkable big wall with a razor wire, as if the American people are going to come and climb a wall and attack the Capitol. Meanwhile, we have thousands and thousands every single day coming across our border that is not protected. COVID is coming through. Human trafficking is coming through. Drugs are coming through. And in that process, we're being, there's so many Americans will be hurt and harmed by that process, and we're not addressing it. So I think this is going to be a good chance for us to talk, Republicans and Democrats, independents, so those who love our nation, really for the first time in a while, to really talk about what we the people can do to make sure we move forward, because none of us like to go through this process we're going through right now that's been put onto us by the Democrats.
And yesterday, what did you do with your day, first of all, because you had the day off, but also in addressing the Capitol and this alleged threat that never came to fruition, thank God. When is the Capitol going to be set free? Because it is the people's house, so that people can go on tours and that they can be let in. Yeah. It doesn't look like a war zone down there.
Well, it's interesting because you're exactly right. This is the people's house. What's there when people come through is a bunch of history, history of our country, our process of gaining freedom. And that's what the left wants to keep us away from. We feel extremely safe. Understand, those of us who go into those buildings every single day feel extremely safe. We have just the Capitol Police by themselves have done a great job. And I think I'm looking forward to this whole thing coming to fruition. We'll have a chance to look at the entire process of what happened that day, because we've always been able to stop riots in the past. Particularly when we're aware of it, if we want to do that, and in this case here, you know, obviously it's a very, very safe place. I'm not down in New Orleans. I'm helping Clayson Bernard, who's actually running for Democratic seat here, and we need to make sure we get as many Republicans in place of all backgrounds, so we can really start dealing with what we're looking at now. And that's an ideology that's trying to slow us down.
Who's in charge of the federal government at present? And I ask that question because Biden hasn't had an unscripted moment since he was inaugurated. And I think there are legitimate questions about just exactly who is running the show in D.C. at present.
We all have to be concerned about that. And you're right. Many of us knew this going in the process, going into the election period, that Biden didn't have, he's not there. He's just not there. And so if something happens to people as we get old, but in the past we've been able to vet our electives, those we elect, so we make sure those kind of folks that they cannot control the process or are not elected. But I'm not sure. I know this. They're moving so far to the left, it makes no sense. The things they're doing right now, there's no wisdom, no understanding of the people. And it's, again, it's caused such a contrast that even those who voted for President Biden have to be concerned about what's there.
Let me get your reaction to this. I spoke with Victor Davis Hanson yesterday, and his take on this was Biden doesn't care about the midterms. He doesn't care about control of the House and the Senate after 2022. He is going to do everything he can, and those around him who may be the implementers are going to do everything they can to move as far left as quickly as they can, executive orders like you've seen, because that's how he's going to be recorded in the annals of history. He was the most leftist, they would say, progressive president. He is the one who accomplished all of the dreams from my father that President Obama had. It happened in Joe Obama's third term, Joe Biden's one term, and that's all he cares about.
Well, I personally don't think he knows. It's not that he doesn't care. He's just nothing there. What's happening, they put papers in front of him, they tell him what to do, and then he's just following orders. So there's someone making these decisions, and whoever it is a very hard leftist, obviously, in my mind. And they're trying to get as much done as possible because they know that within 2 years they will not have the amount of power that they have right now. And I want American people to recognize what we're looking at are people, an ideology that cares nothing but about power. Don't care about we the people. Don't care about what's right, what's fair. It's all about power. And again, it's scary in one sense, but in another sense, I have so much faith in American people, Dan and Amy. I really do. That we have a tendency of waking up when those opportunities like this come up. Once we know we're in a fight, and that's what's happening right now. We have people that are not working. When you have kids that are not in school, when you have vaccines that are being loaded down by the border by illegals coming in instead of putting in arms of those who are at risk here. These are emotional issues that really get us to talking in a way that we have not in the past.
You said illegal immigrants that are coming in, they're getting vaccinated at the border?
Well, yeah. they're being vaccinated at the border they've been offered to be vaccinated, for instance, in San Diego. There's hotels there that they're being brought to and actually being vaccinated. We just found out a couple of days ago, over 100 of them have come through, were not vaccinated, found out they had COVID, put on a bus and sent into the city, into America. So this is criminal in my mind. It's criminal to take this virus that's been such a big deal for us this last year, and not take it seriously and allow it to come into our country for whatever reasons that they think is important. At the end of the day, they want to make sure that they have the power to have illegals to be voting, and that's going to be something else probably down the road. They'll put another bill through. What we have, the good thing is this: we have a conservative Supreme Court. I believe that the legacy of President Trump will be the three Supreme Court justices put in place that's going to slow this process down. He can't do this so much in 2 years. And what we'll be able to do is slow the process down, have these conversations, know that at the end of the day, our biggest enemy is within today. It's the Marxists, it's the socialists, and that's hidden them away themselves into the Democratic Party that's doing nothing good for American people. And so the legacy, the end game of this process will be we'll come out a lot more educated. I think we'll have much more engagement at the lower levels. I'm asking my fellow Americans to get on the school boards, to do things on the councils that within your towns. Do what you need to do to make sure we're engaged, because the left has done this for decades. They've been doing this thing for a while, and we just need to be able to compete at that level.
As a student of American history and really world history, as you are, and you've written about in terms of the threats that poisonous ideologies, socialism and communism, pose, even if Republicans took back the House and the Senate in 2022, you still have this whole cultural purge going on, manifesting itself in so many different ways in so many different sectors. And including, by the way, now reparations actually being moved forward in the West, in Evanston, Illinois, the home of Northwestern University, in Bristol, England. An area that was once represented 250 years ago by Edmund Burke, for goodness sakes. I wonder what you think the greatest threat, you know, that the greatest presentation of threat, the cultural purge is that's occurring with the cultural purge, and where people you think would be highest and best, where they could put the highest best use of their time in terms of pushing back.
Again, Dan, the biggest part of this is us waking up, us knowing that we have a threat. We're now understanding that we're now seeing what cancel culture looks like, and it's at some point the American people are going to get very, very sick and tired of this. I think the greatest thing that's coming out of this is recognizing that we've been under attack for a long, long time. The leftists have been attacking our kids and the educational system, and that's actually what was defined way back when Karl Marx said that the first battlegrounds rewriting of history. They have known that if you change the way our kids think, they can change this intergenerationally. And so now that we know that, I mean, what we'll do when we come back into power is be addressing things like what's happening in our college system. If we cannot have a system, a process by which our colleges, our education process, is putting out kids that love our country, can compete, we need to make some changes there. We need to pull back that funds from, I don't care what they call themselves. It could be Yale, Harvard, whatever. If they're anti-American, and making sure our kids are coming out with degrees that do not make a difference with debt and a hate to our country, we need to make sure that we're addressing that in a big way. So what I'm
what with respect to colleges, what form would that take? I mean, what you mean you're going to end the student loan program, and how would you defund the colleges from the federal level?
I would look at all the above. I would look at anything that right now is supporting the hard left. Anything that's supporting taking our kids and changing them into citizens who do not love our country. All of the above. We have Harvard has what $40 billion in endowment. Why should we be paying into a college system that has $40 billion in endowment, remarkably big payments that these kids are going into debt, and not addressing it? No, we need to now be looking at things that we have not in the past to recognize that we're under attack, and that means we have to take a totally fresh view of our educational system to make sure we're coming out with kids that truly appreciate and love our nation and can be great producers for our nation. Not what's happening right now. So I would say anything that deals with education. By the way, that's the committee I'm on right now, education and labor. And once we get our house back, our Senate back, we'll have enough time then to begin to start looking at all these things and control the process. As you see now, what the left is doing, controlling it, we can do the same thing once the good people, the right people in office.
Burgess Owens, former NFLer, Super Bowl champion, author of Why I Stand, From Freedom to the Killing Fields of Socialism, and now congressman from Utah's 4th. Burgess Owens, thanks so much for joining us.
Can I say this, Dan? Can I say this,
yeah.
Dan?
Yeah.
The Naked Communist, please pick it up. It's
Cleon
a remarkable
Skozen.
good read,
yeah.
And you'll see what we're going at.
Yeah, Naked Communist, Cleon Skozen. Thanks so much, Burgess. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.
Yep. Thank you, and he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word APP to 64636 to download the app today. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. February jobs number is in, 379,000 jobs. That's well above what ADP had projected on Wednesday of 117,000. And drops the unemployment rate to 6.2%. The bottom 10 when it comes to employment in the country, in other words, the top 10 states and or territories with the highest unemployment rate.
Oh, can we guess?
See if you can identify something they have in common. The top 10 unemployment rate, all over 8%. Illinois, Connecticut, Michigan, Nevada, Massachusetts, New Mexico, New York, District of Columbia, California, Hawaii.
Oh, all Democratic-run states.
Yeah, every one of them has a Democrat executive. That's right.
And had draconian lockdowns. Yep.
And unemployment rate a third higher than the national average. But, hey, you don't go change in Illinois. For more on this, we're pleased to be joined by Scott the Cow Guy, Shaladies. Scott.
Where's the moo?
Gets a drum roll.
Bring it on, baby.
Hey, Scott, how you doing? Morning.
Good. How are you? Good morning.
So, 379,000 jobs, the recovery is in full swing. Texas and Mississippi are open for business, and all is right with America.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a great number. It's double the expectation. To your point earlier about those states that have the worst unemployment, they do that because they know they'll get rewarded in the new COVID relief bill. Because the disincentive that is built in, the worst states that have the worst fourth quarter last year will get the most money if that thing gets through. So something to know. But, yeah, double the expectations. It's good. But we need to do that every year for the next for 2 years, every month for the next 2 years to get back to where we were pre-pandemic. So we still have some work to do, not to be a Debbie Downer. But, yeah, I'm glad to see that and it's really got nothing to do with any, stimulus or surfing. It's all got everything to do with reopening, because most of the jobs that came back were leisure and hospitality. Again, that's fantastic because they got so slammed earlier in the year. So, I mean, it's a great place to start. It's just what's going to happen after we kind of get through all this, and how does this world look on the other side when we wake up from the hangover of, the reopening?
What about what Jay Powell had to say yesterday, particularly about inflation? Are we letting our modern monetary theorists turn a recovery that was supposed to be good for markets into a market correction?
We have to be very, very careful. I mean, I'm not an inflation hawk. You know, I don't look for, it's not been something I've really worried about. Even in 08, when we had 0% interest rates, that was something that everybody was expecting. That's never really happened. And there's been any number of reasons why we don't see inflation happen like we've been told it will. But boy, oh boy, you know, with the amount of money that we're throwing at this issue at the same time that we're recovering, you kind of have to, you know, now I'm kind of dialing back my expectations of no inflation, and I'm kind of more concerned now about it popping up, and it popping up so quickly. But the problem is that, look, we're going to have this grand reflation trade, grand reopen reflation trade, right? And everybody's going to get, you know, euphoric about being able to come out of your houses finally because you've accepted communism. And you're going to,
I love you.
You're going to see, then you're going to have this economy where it's going to be the I deserve it economy, right? Let's go on that cruise. I deserve it. Let's go on a holiday. I deserve it. Let's go buy that new house. I deserve it. But let me tell you, when it's all said and done and we come down on the other side of this thing, what does this world look like? And that's what I'm trying to figure out, because we're going to be face to face with the Biden administration, and maybe we're going to have 40%, you know, tax on capital gains. Maybe we're going to have 35% tax on corporations. Maybe we're going to have, you know, 2% or 4% wealth destruction tax on people that earn over 50 million. I mean, there's going to be a lot of issues on the other side of this bowling ball that's going to work its way through this boa constrictor, right?
Well, speaking of the housing piece, going to go buy a new house, a mortgage rate, 30-year mortgage rate, top 3% for the first time since last July.
Right, and that's going to be a psychological thing. And for some reason, we've all been really accustomed to the fact that, say, the 30-year at 3% or the 10-year, which everybody's watching right now, at 1.6%, is now high. But, I mean, let's face it. I mean, these are still incredibly low. And I'll tell you, I do like Warren Buffett, and he's not he doesn't really think that this is going to be here to stay. We might have, I mean, he's looking at, you know, these bonds. We set a world record, 6 weeks ago. $18 trillion in negatively priced government debt around the globe. So there still are issues out there. We're just going through a little bit of the roaring 20s right now, but we'll see how long it's going to last. And that's my worry. We can't grow at 8% every year. And the calls of 5 to 10% GDP are what we're talking about here. So let's be happy, but keep your feet on the ground, because we've got a battle on the other side of that bowling ball as it goes through that snake.
And we still have a battle getting there. I mean, 10 million jobs lost in the pandemic that have yet to be filled.
Yeah.
I know somebody that works at the Hilton. Are you ready for this, Scott? They told her they don't expect her to be back at work. She does catering and banquets until 2023 at the earliest.
Well, I mean, look, it's insane. I don't even know what to say to these people. I feel bad for them, but the numbers today say that those people are coming back pretty, fast. We'll see. I mean, we don't need this. What I think is going to be interesting about this whole thing is this. Last September, or whenever it was, Nancy Pelosi had the opportunity to say yes to $2 trillion or $2.2 trillion, whatever it was. And she played politics with the whole thing. Now she's got the world's biggest job to try to convince Congress that our economy is so bad that we need a $1.9 trillion stimulus. It really doesn't have anything to do with COVID, because everything's so bad and we get numbers like this thrown in her face. I can't wait to watch her try to justify $1.9 trillion in the face of the numbers that we're starting to see right now. That's going to be the interesting thing over the next, say, probably 3 weeks.
Well, one of the ways that she can justify it is by talking about the amount of debt that's been accumulated at the lower end of the socioeconomic scale. People who are in arrears on rent and utility payments and moratorium on their mortgage, credit cards, other loans. Because remember, the 10 million jobs, we're talking about people that are in the lower three quintiles of the socioeconomic distribution and in terms of, you know, household income. And so you could make a class envy play. You inflicted all this damage down market in terms of household income, and now we're going to pay to make these people whole.
Well, I mean, if you're going to shut down the economy, you take that choice, that's the choice you've made as a government, right? You're going to have to, because you take away the people's right to work. I was totally against it at the time. I still am. That's something that you have to build in to what you've done. But to keep it done, to keep it locked down as long as we have, and continue with the draconian measures that we still see happening today, when you've got 16 states that have, you know, got rid of the mask mandate, but still we've got the head of our medicine talking about wearing two masks. I mean, what's this world coming to? You know, I feel safer.
But Scott, my point is to say this, though. You know, we're looking at all the money that's sloshing around and household incomes bumping up and savings rates bumping up. But is that being pulled up by the upper quintile, where what we're not seeing and we're not talking about, because these people don't have clout, is the 50,000 and under household income. And even if they're being propped up with by transfer payments right now, they're also, you know, in hiatus for paying bills, and they don't have the wherewithal to make up 6 months of mortgage payments in one payment, and so on and so forth. And this is
right.
Sort of what we're not seeing and what we're not talking about in terms of all this money that's supposed to be stimulative. In point of fact, most of it is going to go to pay for the sins that were committed by the politicians and inflicted upon those at the lower end of the socioeconomic ladder.
Exactly right. And to your point and to Amy's point, I mean, the issue is nobody is talking about that sector, because I've been writing about this for a while now. You've got the canyons of New York and Chicago, those buildings. I'm going to go down there today in about an hour to do a Fox hit. There's nobody in the buildings, Dan. There's nobody there. I mean, let's just say they're 10% occupied. I've been doing this now for a year, and I haven't ridden the elevator with anybody else except for twice, and I go down three times a week. So those people we haven't even begun to take stock in the fact that all those buildings are empty. That means there's no customers down there anymore for those four or five shops that are on the concourse level of every big building. I mean, we have not begun to even, we're talking about leisure and hospitality. What about the guy, the dry cleaner and the key cutter? I mean, these people are gone forever, and all the restaurants that have been still gone forever. I still think there's a great reckoning. And then that's why you've got these people talking about going back in 2023, because you've got so many big CEOs. My brother-in-law works for a massive company. They have two floors of the Sears Tower in Chicago. They don't know when they're going to go back. Still.
Well, so, a lot of companies are realizing they don't need to go back, and they're not going to ever go back.
I think that's going to be a mistake, because, you know, so much work gets done collaboratively still. I face-to-face is always going to be better than Zoom. I don't care what you say, but we're not going to be 100% Zoom. We'll come back from that. But the point is this. We're not bringing the customers back to those big cities like we thought we were going to. People are now, you know, there has been a behavioral change. And so that lower level of income, you know, the guy that was actually delivering lettuce to the restaurant, right? We don't talk about that guy, because he can't work from home, right? Those people are the ones that we still have not really taken stock in. And I agree with you, Dan. I mean, that's the biggest transfer of wealth in 100 years.
He is Scott the Cow Guy, Shalady, Fox Business contributor. Catch him on Fox, as you said, in short order. Scott, thanks as always. Appreciate it.
All right. Have a good weekend.
Thanks. You too, Scott. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, here's a perfect lead into Open Mic Friday.
Yeah.
Introduce you to Stuart Allen Clark. He is the pastor of First General Baptist Church in Malden, Missouri. And he's been put on a hiatus after the following sermon, where he offered some advice and counsel to women, to wives, to be pleasing to their husbands.
I
want you to recognize the courage I have in playing this and opening this up for discussion. Pastor Stuart Allen Clark's highlights.
And ladies, here's the thing you need to know about men. Don't give him a reason to be like this distracted boyfriend. You hear me? Don't give him a reason to be looking around. Hello? So, okay. Why is it so many times that women, after they get married, let themselves go?
Activewear.
Why do they do that? Now look, I'm not saying every woman can be the epic trophy wife of all time, like Melania Trump.
Oh,
I'm not saying that at
God.
All. Now, most women can't be trophy wives, but you know, like her, maybe a participation trophy. I don't know, but all I can say is, not everybody looks like that. Amen. Not everybody looks like that. But you don't need to look like a butch either.
Oh.
But you say, how can I do that? Oh, I'm so glad you asked that question. I'm so glad you asked that question, because you're in my office, you and your husband, and we're talking about your marriage, and you've asked me this question about what can I do about that. All right, if you were sitting in my office, here's the first thing I'd say to you. And boy, I hate to say that. This is why I don't do marital counseling anymore. And that is weight control. So how important is this? Let me tell you something. I have a friend. He has put a divorce weight on his wife. That's how important this is. You know, makeup. Makeup is a good thing. You know, one little boy said to another boy, why do girls wear makeup and perfume? He said, because they're ugly and they stink. You don't want to be ugly and stink.
Oh, my God.
Scientists have discovered, by the way, a food that diminishes a woman's sex drive. It's called wedding cake.
Oh.
Yeah.
What? There was a lot of uncomfortable men in the church that day. Now, Stuart Alan Clark has been, as I said, put on hiatus. He is seeking counseling, so he says, one of those generic seeking counseling after saying or doing something that was controversial, to say the least.
A divorce weight? I mean, he just put the onus all on the woman. A lot of men get fat, too, in marriages and let themselves go. Don't you know, Dan? Okay, so I mean that was a little gender bias there. My God,
oh, do you think?
God,
do you
a
think...
divorce weight?
Yeah. Well, he did say. Now he did qualify that by saying he doesn't do marriage counseling anymore.
Thank God. But I mean, a lot of people. So, ladies, this is the thing: marry a guy who likes you without makeup on. Because no one wears makeup all the time except for Dolly Parton. That's okay. I don't ever want Dolly Parton to take her makeup off.
Well, or you do the Tammy Faye Baker and you have it like tattooed on your face.
Right.
You could do that too. I'm not saying that's a particularly good look. I'm just saying it's been done.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Open mic! Open mic Friday! Call in now! Open Mic Friday!
Yeah, it's Open Mic Friday, 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. Grab a line. We'll take your comments, compliments, concerns, constructive criticism, conspiracy theories, general crack pottery, whatever you got. Getting some reaction to Missouri General Baptist... pastor had to say.
Stewart, yeah, who, by the way, could use a weight loss program himself. I just watched the video. He's a little fat.
Some of the feedback we're getting, somebody asked, oh my gosh, a divorce weight. Please tell me this pastor looks like Tom Brady or David Beckham, because if not, I'm not sure he's allowed to have these opinions. And yes, he, much like myself, he's not really in any position to talk about
he looks like Drew
divorce
Carey.
Weight.
He looks like big Drew Carey, not, you know, Price is Right Drew Carey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, the other phrase that seems to be riling some of the respondents, participation medal wife instead of trophy wife, that doesn't seem to be sitting too well with some.
Funny.
I wonder why that would be. Divorce weight, though, you know, I mean, and that could go both ways. What maybe like had an incentive clause in the marriage contract. Just think about it that way. Does that make it any more palatable?
312-642-5600. No.
No, it doesn't.
It was a good comedy skit. I mean, it sounded like an SNL skit, to be honest.
Not SNL. General Baptists, the General Association of the General Baptists responded.
Oh, they did? What?
Mm-hmm. General Baptists believe that every woman was created in the image of God and they should be valued for that reason. Furthermore, we believe that all individuals, regardless of any other factors, are so loved by God that Christ died for them. So, I mean, they couldn't be sprinting away from... Pastor Clark any faster than they are at present. So I just don't want to, you know, suggest that this is somehow representative of anybody but that pastor.
All right. Can I get something off my chest real quick?
Sure.
Double masking because Gavin Newsom yesterday, because Texas and Mississippi and 14 other states are going to, you know, roll back masking mandates. Now you have to wear, he's suggesting wearing two masks, and he's holding up two masks in California.
We are encouraging people basically to double down on mask wearing, particularly in light of all of what I would argue is bad information coming from at least four states in this country.
How did this bozo, this mimbo get elected? What people thought, oh, he's tall, thin, good looking. Let's vote for him.
Those same people that elected him, at least 2 million of them have signed a petition to put him up for a recall election, which is more than the 1.5 million they need. And they're still collecting signatures up until the March 15th deadline. It doesn't mean he'll lose his position. Doesn't mean he'll be recalled. But even triggering a recall says something about how Californians viewed the job, at least a significant number of Californians viewed the job that Newsom has done. Oh, by the way, it's not four states. There are 16 states now that have rescinded any mask mandate to the extent that some of them had a mask mandate to begin with. 16. And by the way, this is the response that you get on MSNBC in terms of you trying to have a thoughtful discussion on masks or any other COVID restriction mandate. Joy Reid over at MSNBC reacting to the announcements in Texas and in Mississippi that the mask mandates will be no more.
When these things unfold, Joy, it feels like nobody cares. That's when you see all these health professionals just feeling slapped down. It feels like nobody cares. And that's how many Texans, Mississippians, they're all feeling that way tonight.
No, absolutely. I'm sure the doctors are exhausted. And, you know, Jason, there is a term called necropolitics, which is essentially the politics of who gets to live and who gets to die.
Oh, come
and these states, what they have in common is that they have structures which say that black and brown lives matter less. And so all that matters is that the black and brown people get their behinds into the factory and make me my steaks, make me my stuff, get there and do my nails, work, get back to work now and do the things that I, the comfortable, affluent person, need.
Wow.
Necropolitics. That's what Governors Abbott and Reeves are practicing, as well as any governor that opposes mask mandates, or maybe in Joy Reid's world, opposes two masks as a mandate. I don't know.
Well, and Greg Abbott, or Governor Abbott, excuse me, you know, it's just personal responsibility, folks.
We no longer need government running your lives. Instead, everybody must continue to assume their own individual responsibility.
Yeah, and so if you want to wear a mask, you can wear a mask. That is your choice.
A little less, to be, again, constructively critical of Greg Abbott, he's been a little bit slow to come to that position. He should have taken that position long ago, if not from the outset, frankly.
Right, and quickly, the double masking, the reason why we brought it up is that Maine Township, which is Maine South, Maine East, Maine West, are you ready for this? They're going to require students to double mask after spring break. There's some exceptions to students in the special education program. That will help ensure the safest environment possible as more students are in the classrooms.
Right.
You think double all the freaking mask. Are you kidding me?
You think all the bad ideas are just reside in the Chicago public school system?
No.
Tried to tell you over and over again, the suburbs taken over by the same ideologues are even worse in many respects. The Champagne Socialists, these just distasteful, hard-left, sentimental barbarians in the suburbs. Worse. Oh, Jeff in Fox Lake, you're in Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Amy. General crack pottery and probably dovetails with all these new mask mandates, but with all apologies to Mel Tillis. You're just a COVID cowboy. You got a J.B. Giles and a Lori Lightfoot hair. And you're strapping on a mask as big as Texas. Because you got no right to say I just won't wear. There you go.
It's nice to get a little ditty on a Friday afternoon. Yeah, thanks so much, Jeff.
Pretty creative.
Didn't exactly remind me of George Strait, but not bad. All right. Terry in Rogers Park.
Hey, I guess this is a different subject, but I find it hard to believe the average American wants South America pouring in here again. And why does Biden get to do this without consulting the American people instead of the oligarchs in Washington? Because we're the ones who pay his salary.
All right. Thanks for the call, Terry. Referring to report, this from domestic policy advisors to President Biden, expecting 117,000 plus unaccompanied minors to show up at the southern border this year, which would be record setting.
And they can come in without a COVID test. But if you go to Mexico and we want to come back in, we have to have a negative COVID test to get back into our own country.
Brad in the West Loop.
Yeah, regarding Governor Newsom, you know, it's clearly obvious. It's no biggie to him. He's two-faced, so we need two masks.
There you go. Thanks for the call,
But
Brad.
He was almost laughing. If you watch the video, he's like laughing while he's saying it.
How many masks did he have on at the French Laundry again?
Exactly, Dan.
Bob and Hammond.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Mary. Happy Friday, guys.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Just heard recently that Illinois is the most corrupt state in the United States. Yeah. California's 2 and New York's 3. What time today is the press conference that Lori Lightfoot and Pritzker are going to have to say to all of us that the cycle will stop? Illinois will no longer be corrupt. Is that going to happen?
Yeah, no,
they're cleaning up Illinois and Chicago, no question.
Yeah, don't hold your breath. Bob,
the reigning champion. Tom Sudeikis in Barrington. Oh, boy, he wants to comment on the pastor. Let's see how courageous Tom Sudeikis is. Hi, Tom.
Oh, I wanted to say thank you for playing Pastor Andrew Dice Clay. That was great. Hickory dickory dock. The mouse ran down the clock. The clock struck 2. It took a poo in my brand new leather shoe. Oh, hey, you know, this COVID thing is going to be stretched into the future forever because they have got to cover for Biden not getting out there. They have got to keep him under wraps. So this is going to go on and on and on.
You know, Must-See
TV. You guys
TV,
keep up the great work.
Yep. Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, Tom.
Must-See TV is when Biden has a White House room briefing. That is going to be Must-See TV because it's been 45 days now and he's nothing. Can you imagine what a disaster and a train wreck that's going to be when he finally has to answer questions from the media? And I hope Ducey's in the front row.
Dan in Downers Grove.
Good morning.
Morning.
My comment is I'm all for the pastor. I think he's spot on. My wife and I had a contract after we started 35 years ago.
Yeah.
She's never got above 160 pounds. It's worked out well.
And what was yours? What was your trigger weight?
My trigger weight is 155. I'm like 170, but I still look good.
Well, maybe you don't look so good because you're a little overweight, according to your contract.
170. You know, it doesn't. Thanks for the call, Dan. All right.
Well, she ain't a lady unless she's 180. Maybe.
Well, that's up
in Wisconsin,
north of the Cheddar Curtain. Yeah, according to us, that's according to
Chuck
from Delavan, yes. Of course. Yeah, I want to stay away from these blast zones. Darlene in Tinley Park.
Yeah, I'm very, very upset. I was a teacher for many, many years, and way back I taught the distinction among capitalism, socialism, and communism. Young people aren't taught that anymore, and I am very concerned because what is going on in our country is strictly, this is what they do in communist countries. And why can't they stop Biden? I don't understand how he can sign 50-some executive orders and get away with it. It doesn't make any sense to me at all.
Thanks for the call, Darlene. You know, one project that was reported on this week, and I actually spoke with him yesterday, Larry Sanger, who is the co-founder of Wikipedia, has a new project called Encyclosphere to address some of what you're suggesting in terms of decentralized reference material online, since Wikipedia has been taken over by the leftists, like so many of these platforms, and is now spiking a true accounting of the ravages of socialism and communism in the 20th century and the real impact of those who adopt that philosophy and then get control of the reins of power. So I'd keep your eye out for Larry Sanger's Encyclosphere and share that because I think that's one of those build your own castle positive projects that's going out there that may not have the same profile, at least yet, as Parler and Gab and some of the others, alternative sites for social media, for example. Rob and Morris.
Hey, how you guys doing? Just in reference to this issue with male and females and sports confusion, why don't we just create a new category and call it other? Males compete with males, females compete with females, and everybody else is in the other category. I mean, we already have the Special Olympics for people that aren't able to participate in the regular Olympics. So we can have the others.
Well, or we can just go, thanks for the call, Rob, we can just go the way of Mississippi and say, and other states, Idaho, and say you play sports based on your biological sex.
Right.
We can always just stick with what we know to be true rather than creating an other category.
And that's why you can't join the women's basketball team at Old Miss.
Right.
Because I know you wanted to be the shooting guard. Right?
I do still have some eligibility. Mike in Franklin, Tennessee.
Well, you know, IRS now is tormenting people. IRS has been issuing notices called CP-59. Dan Prof, you haven't filed your tax return and you haven't paid your tax. You've done both. On February 19th, they just issued a statement. The IRS regrets any confusion caused by this mailing. There's no need to call. Over 300,000 people got this notice. I was at the post office a couple days ago, and there had to be a 90-year-old lady crying. She said, I got my certified mail. I got my return receipt request. And IRS says, I didn't pay my taxes, and I have a canceled check. So if you're getting these notices, IRS is as stupid as every Democratic city council. Isn't this scary?
Thanks for the call, Mike. Didn't know about that, but appreciate the heads up on it. Mark and Glen Ellen.
Yeah, hey, guys. I wonder, you know, about the dichotomy with the police. Remember the Capitol shooting? That police officer was put in the rotunda, and yet, you know, you have the left at the same time vilifying the police. It's just another example of, you know, Orwellian thinking, and I just want people to think about that over the weekend.
Thanks, Mark. Tom in Deer Park.
Good morning. French Laundry story, and it's nothing nasty. It's actually nice. Not to humble brag, but we went there on our wedding honeymoon. Uh-huh. And got out there. This nice. Is in the mid-90s.
Wine country, sure. Oh, yeah.
So romantic.
It was nice, but we mid-90s, before the internet. Anyway, they said, you know, we don't take plastic here of any way, shape, or form. And, you know, it's a little bit expensive, but you have whatever you want. You don't have enough cash. You just mail us a check when you get back home. And I'm like, what? Really? Wow, you don't even know me? I'm like, yeah, this is the way we operate here. And, you know, apparently they didn't have any losses or slippage, so... It's kind of a pleasant thing with all the nasty stuff I usually call in about. So that's my story.
Thanks for the call, Tom. I've been to the French Laundry, too. That was not my experience.
You paid what they take plastic now, right?
Yeah, I was not given the mail as a check option. I mean, not that I would have skipped out on it, but it's expensive.
Okay.
It's expensive. You're going to need somebody to take you.
Okay, like thousands of dollars expensive?
Well, it can be depending on the wine. The wine you order, I mean. Holly in St. Louis.
Holly, I miss you.
Hello. Hi. Yes. Berlan is not the only film reviewer on these airwaves. I took the opportunity on hold to write out my film review that I've now present you with. Here
we
go.
What's the name of the film?
You will find out. I am lucky enough to live in a state that stayed open and allowed movie theaters to do the same. Shout out to the High Point Theater in St. Louis. A few weeks ago, my husband and I went to see the movie Nomadland. We had no expectations for this movie other than a night out on the town. Hear me. This is a must-see movie about life in America of the invisible people, the people you look away from at the gas station. The story follows the life of Fern, played masterfully by Frances McDormand. She lost it all, including her husband, when the company town they had forged a nice life in suddenly went dead and like a tumbleweed blew away. The U.S. Post Office even dropped the town's zip code. With no job prospects and no equity out of a worthless home, Fern is left to live in her van. She goes out of her way to develop a sense of belonging, although she actually belongs nowhere. She becomes one of the many people who live a nomad lifestyle, traveling from Amazon warehouse to Amazon warehouse for seasonal work. Did you realize that Amazon owns large RV and van parks to accommodate this new class of migrant worker? I didn't. Fern drives the vast highways of the American West looking for a job here and a job there. She is joined by thousands of Americans who have been forced to live this same lifestyle. And this was pre-pandemic. Fern develops a sense of community where there is no actual community. Many of the people in the film are the actual people the producers of Nomadland came across during the filming of this remarkable movie. They are the true stars, the Jodes of the 21st century. Hmm. Fern has a few chances to break back into normal life that she ultimately shuns. Perhaps after years of this lifestyle, she has lost the confidence and desire to settle down. Settle down to what, exactly? Director Chloe Zhao's efforts at cinematography are rewarded with breathtaking sunsets and beautiful views of the vast America West. The isolated landscapes reflect the emptiness we feel for the nomad class, but also reflect the freedom these nomads grow to embrace. This movie left me with a lump in my throat the same way The Grapes of Wrath did in the eighth grade. These nomads are an independent lot. They are not looking for a government handout, just solid work opportunities that seem so effortless for our ruling class to dismiss. The middle America class is evaporating before our eyes, yet no one wants to see this. Nomadland will open your eyes to the plight of the forgotten man. I encourage everyone to see this remarkable film.
All right. Thank you.
I'm on Fandango, Holly. Right now. I'm going to see it tomorrow.
Thank you for that, Holly. Very good movie review and a good recommendation for the weekend. And I'll throw in, and I haven't even seen any reviews on it yet, but just because it's such a cult classic, Coming to America, the sequel that's out.
Yeah, I saw a clip of it yesterday.
I got to see that. I got to see it. Dan and Amy, Chicago's Morning Answer.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer.
Your show keeps me alive during the week. There's nobody I'd rather listen to between 5 and 9 in the morning than you guys.
On AM 560, The Answer.